Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, looking at those images from Maui, it's hard to believe. And the wind, hurricane force winds, no rain, because the hurricane was like 900 miles south. But those winds just are fueling these fires. It's real. Anybody that's been over to Maui knows it's kind of windy there all the time anyway, but this is just really impacting the firefighting efforts.
Yeah, there are reports of 50 mile an hour, even up to 70 mile an hour winds. Mm. So, yeah, I think 70 miles an hour is right at that hurricane level.
Yeah, it is. 70 is the threshold for becoming a hurricane category one. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, Thursday, the 10th day of August, 2023. Our program will begin year 14 in January of the radio program in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. Our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome right off the bat District 1 Democrat Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Supervisor Scott, how are you?
Bill, happy to be here, doing really well. Hope the same is true for you.
Well, it's doing well. Yes, we are doing well. Thank you for coming. Really, you had kind of quite a bit of a drive to get over here in time. You were doing checking out one of the libraries.
Yes, I was invited by the branch librarian at the Nanini branch up at Ina and Shannon, and it was terrific to get a tour of the facility and meet her staff and patrons and get a sense of the work of our hardworking library staff at one of the branches.
Pima County has a very robust library system.
We do, absolutely. And a few years ago, the libraries in the city and the county were consolidated into one library district. And we have got libraries all over the county and a significant number of them in District 1. And I was glad to tour the Nanini branch today.
Let's talk a little bit about an issue that was brought up yesterday by last week. By Supervisor Steve Christie, and then we revisited it with Jan Lesher on Friday on the show, and it's compensation for Pima County workers. Supervisor Christie not at all happy with that program. He wanted to delay it. He brought it up at the board meeting on Tuesday of this week, but the delay is not going to happen, I guess.
So Supervisor Christie, at our meeting on July 25th, voted in favor of moving forward with the results of the classification and compensation study that's been going on since 2021. The board authorized this study near the beginning of our tenure, and it's been rolling out since then. He voted in the affirmative on July 25th. That gave him the right to ask for reconsideration of the item at our most recent meeting, which, as you said, was 2 days ago. He did move for reconsideration. It was seconded by Supervisor Bronson, but the majority of the board went with the decision that we had made on July 25th, which was to move forward with implementing the results of this classification and compensation study. Bill, we are looking at systematizing something that has been a patchwork operation since the last time we looked at classification of our employees and their compensation systemically, which was when Dwight Eisenhower was president.
Oh, it's been that long.
Yes,
huh?
It is. And the county has a significant vacancy rate, a significant turnover rate, and what we frequently hear during exit interviews with employees or when we're trying to go through the hiring process is that our salaries are just not competitive. And the numbers speak to that fact. So the board authorized the administration to work with a consultant known as CBIZ, again, back in 2021. And we have been getting updates on this study over the last 2 years. The results came out. Every supervisor and their staff had the opportunity to meet with human resources leadership and get an overview the results of the study and how they were going to be rolled out, not just this year, but this is going to be a multi-year effort, systematizing our classification and compensation of employees. And my office spent well over an hour meeting with human resources leadership. I don't know if the other district offices took example of that, took advantage of that, but we have had all of our questions answered. And what we were hearing from our employees is, please don't fail to pass this. Please don't delay it. And we were also hearing that from department directors and the row officers who are elected to run their departments. And what my office has been hearing is that employees are happy that we move forward with this systemization of, of something that has really just been a patchwork operation for decades. It's going to not only mean that people are going to be compensated at a level that not only is worthy of the work they're doing, but is going to make us competitive. And hopefully we're going to be able to cut into that high turnover rate and that high vacancy rate. We've got twice the vacancy rate that we should. It should be somewhere between 5 to 10%, and it's close to 20%.
There were probably a lot of job areas that were not even included. I mean, when you go back to 1957, we're talking 60 years. So that's a lot that's happened in 60 years. Some of these job categories didn't even exist back then.
Exactly.
Like IT.
Yeah, no question, Bill. And it was, so therefore, not just systematizing what we're doing, but also modernizing our approach as well. And the county has right around 7,000 employees. And in a large organization, to not be able to approach both classification of employees and their compensation in a way that not only makes us competitive with other people who are trying to get applicants that we would like to have on board, but also to keep people at the county. When I was touring this library this morning, I met a longtime library employee whose brother used to work for the county. But a couple of years ago, he chose to go to work for the University of Arizona. And this library employee told me that her brother left because he was offered a much more competitive salary for doing the same work at the University of Arizona, which is one of our competitors, another large public sector employer. But we also compete with the private sector. So we need to be more competitive. We need to keep people at work. And as I said, when we passed this on July 25th, the ultimate beneficiaries of having a workforce with less turnover is an experienced workforce that is better at providing the services and supports our constituents depend upon. So they are the ultimate beneficiaries of what the board took action on back on July 25th.
The Arizona Daily Star today had an article, Should Pima County Build a New Jail? A commission, I believe there are 10 members on that commission, will help determine if a new facility is needed. And this commission, I think they're holding a public meeting today. Is that correct?
That's correct, Bill.
Yeah. Is that, do you have any details on that one or where that
is? They have been meeting, the board authorized the creation of this commission back in the spring, and we gave them 180 days to report back to us, not only on the condition of the current jail, but whether or not a new jail is necessary. Mm-hmm. And there are three working groups within this commission. One of them is looking at questions involving facilities. One of them is looking at operations of the jail, and the other one is looking at finances, especially if the commission recommends to the board that we have a new jail. The commission could recommend to the board that we make improvements to the existing facility as well. So I know that there's a belief amongst some folks in the community. Some of them were quoted in that article today that that the die is cast and that a new jail is in the offing. That is not the case. The commission is going to make a recommendation to the board. It may be a multi-tiered recommendation. It may involve a new facility. It may not involve a new facility. It may involve significant improvements to the existing facility. It may not. So the board is waiting until this commission makes its recommendations to us. And at that point, the decision is up to the board as to what we want to do with those recommendations.
Yeah, the same critics who say it is a done deal for a new jail, they're very upset that the number of custody deaths in the jail is not part of the discussion, that the commission is not looking into that.
Well,
but
that's
not really what they were charged with in looking into, correct?
That's
Rex
correct.
Scott?
I mean, that's correct. They were charged at looking at the condition of the current facility and whether we need a new one. They were charged with looking at the operations of the current facility and how those operations can be continued either in the current facility or a renovated facility or a new one. And they were also charged with looking at finances. All of us are saddened and concerned with the number of deaths in the jail. I know that the sheriff is, of course, probably the person most concerned with that outside of the families of the people who died. But you're correct that that was not something that the commission was charged with looking into.
Yeah, and the sheriff has said that the new facility should have viewing spots from above where the correctional officers can observe the inmates, and he said that that might allow the correction officers to respond faster to an overdose, suicide, homicide, and medical emergencies.
Well, that's if we have a new facility.
Yeah,
and again, that is not a certainty. I know that the sheriff has already reached a conclusion on that, but the board has not, and that is why this commission was created to take a look at everything with the current facility and whether it needs to be replaced or renovated holistically. And we're going to get those recommendations, and then the board is going to make the ultimate decision.
All right, we'll pause right here. More with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. More with Supervisor Scott after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview tomorrow will be with Mr. Tom Horn, the former Arizona Attorney General, and now he is school superintendent for the state of Arizona, the second time he's held that office. He'll be our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have lots of questions for Mr. Horn. But right now it's Rex Scott, Pima County Supervisor representing the district I live in, District Number 1. I have noticed, Supervisor, a couple of op-ed pieces in the last, say, 10 days, some letters to the editor, all saying that we don't need the RTA Next program. And of course, you represent Pima County on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board. Where's this undercurrent of kind of people who are saying no already to RTA Next coming from?
I think if anybody is under the impression that if we don't pass a new RTA plan to cover the next 20-year period, that there is some way of making up that lost revenue, they are deluding themselves. The only federal and state funds that are going to be coming into this area are going to be for maintenance. And in terms of expanding our not just our roadways, but our transit and pedestrian and bicycling options, we need a new RTA plan. And what I hope your listeners will be comforted by was that the last time the RTA board met, and our last meeting was on July 27th, we had another, it had to have been, I think, at least the third or fourth, 9-0 unanimous vote of our membership. And our membership, again, is the mayors of the 5 cities and towns, the representatives from the Pascua-Yaqui tribe and the Tohono O'odham Nation, myself representing the county, and then the governor's Southern Arizona representative to the Arizona State Transportation Board, frequent guest on your show, General Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
All 9 of us voted together to state that we want to have the RTA Next election in the spring of 2025. We directed the Citizens Advisory Committee to get a draft plan to us by December of this year so that we can have plenty of time for the board to review what they submit to us, and more significantly, for there to be public comment and review time, just like there was when the original plan was passed back in 2006. We told the Citizens Advisory Committee to work within the framework of the existing half-cent sales tax that is paid by all county taxpayers that funds the current RTA. If there is any consideration of an additional tax on top of the existing one, that will be decided by the board. We also told the Citizens Advisory Committee to take a look at the new cost estimates, because in the wake of the pandemic, there have been significant increases in the cost of materials and labor for all transportation projects. So we told them to look at the new cost estimates that are coming from our consultant. And we also told them to work within the framework of very conservative revenue estimates that we got from the Eller College at the U of A, because we don't want to be in a position that we found ourselves in halfway through this plan, where we were using all the regional funds that come into this area for transportation to make up for the shortfall in RTA revenues that came about primarily as a result of the Great Recession through 2008-2010. So again, a unanimous vote of all nine of us. All nine of us are committed to completing the existing plan. All nine of us are committed to getting a RTA plan in front of the voters in the spring of 2025 that everybody in Pima County, regardless of where they live, can feel comfortable voting for.
So if someone is saying no already to the RTA Next program, they're not, in your opinion, from what I'm hearing from you, they're not looking at the facts that there will be no additional money coming other than state money from the State Department of Transportation for routine maintenance.
State and federal money that's coming into the area is going to be for maintenance. And we can't count on there being any kind of cavalry to ride in if we don't pass a new RTA plan. It is critical. And the fact that we have had this succession of 9-0 votes to try and move the process forward, not only the process to get a new RTA plan in front of the voters, but to complete the current plan, indicates that all of the members of the RTA board understand how critical all of this is.
So right now it's looking at the right mix, right?
Yes.
Of the public transportation and the kind of the whole, look at it like a winemaker. You're looking for kind of the right wine for the area.
We are absolutely looking at the right mix. And the Citizens Advisory Committee is assisted by the Technical Management Committee, which is all of the jurisdictional professionals who provide technical expertise and advice to the Citizens Advisory Committee. The Citizens Advisory Committee is engaged in fulsome, detailed discussions about getting that proper mix. And the board has given them a great deal of latitude, but also gave them some direction last time in terms of some appropriate parameters. And we're going to have an opportunity to check in with them when we have our next meeting in September. But our expectation is that they'll have a draft to us by December.
What about projects that will not be completed, Rex Scott, during this current 20-year program?
Well, the board voted quite a while ago to move four projects from the current plan to RTA Next. Those projects will be completed. They will be in the first wave of projects in the new RTA plan. And if an RTA plan is not passed by the voters, which again would be disastrous, the board is committed to using all funds, local, state, and federal, to make sure that those four projects are completed.
People have heard that there were some problems with the legislature authorizing Maricopa County with their road plan. We don't have to rely on the legislature for deciding whether or not to move forward. I think that's a very important distinction.
It's an extraordinarily important distinction. The legislature did authorize the creation of the RTA as an independent taxing authority, but we do not have to go back to them for reauthorization, as Maricopa County has to do with their Regional Transportation Authority.
So you've talked about these unanimous votes. That's not kind of the narrative we've been hearing. So I think it's good for people to understand that, at least right now, with the current meetings you've been having, everybody seems to be on the same page.
You know, it takes some time, Bill, for us to get to the point where we're able to achieve a 9-0 vote. But like I said, we've done it multiple times. And I'm really proud of all of my colleagues for their willingness to think regionally and act collaboratively.
So the city has their own plan where they have the voters in the city of Tucson have passed. And I believe the kind of the marquee item was that all roads would get attention in the city of Tucson. How does that impact what's going on with RTA Next?
Well, what I have heard the mayor say, I believe on your show, and she said it in RTA board meetings, is that she sees an RTA Next plan as complementing what the city has planned with in the wake of the passage of Prop 411. Certainly, the county with our own road repair and maintenance program, we see RTA Next as a means of complementing our efforts. And if you were to talk to the mayors of the other cities and towns, they would say the same thing. There are things that we're responsible for because they are the responsibility of our jurisdictions. But there are other efforts, not just with roads, but also with transit and bicycle and pedestrian concerns that we really only can address regionally and only through the RTA.
All right, Rex Scott, waiting in the wings, your old buddy, Dr. Hendricks,
is
here.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding. My former superintendent.
Your former superintendent, yeah.
I like it when you pair us up, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah, I try to do that when I can so you two can get reacquainted. I know you've been driving around the district, and you know how hard hit we were in our neighborhoods. Have you ever seen so many trees down?
Never. I haven't lived here as long as you, Bill, but I moved here in 1991.
Right.
And I have never seen destruction of the like that we've seen. And we had, I think, about 56,000 people who were without power at one point.
Yep.
And the board recognized the work of our TEP workers at the meeting on Tuesday. Supervisor Bronson read a very nice tribute, and there were a significant number of TEP employees on hand to accept that recognition.
All right, Rex Scott, good to see you. We'll see you in September.
As yes,
the
sir.
The song goes, the old song. See you in September.
All right, Bill.
All right, Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott will exit, and Dr. Robert Hendricks, our education contributor, is waiting in the wings. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. Tomorrow, Tom Horn, Superintendent of Public Instruction for the state of Arizona, his second go-round as second time he was elected. Of course, he's the former Arizona Attorney General, and he will be our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. Right now, I want to talk a little bit about green things before we resume our conversation on education with Dr. Robert Hendricks. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site, everything you need for the garden. Boy, I'll tell you, our garden took a couple of major hits with those storms. The hail really did not do the plants. I just pulled up a bunch of geraniums that somehow had survived. I had nurtured them through, I think they were like 3 or 4 years old. And people always say, how in the world do you get geraniums to survive year round here? I did, but it was sad. I had to pull up three of them today because it just, between the heat and the hail, that was it. So, good time to visit Green Things, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is zocalovillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're going to now continue our ongoing conversation with our monthly contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, lifelong educator. He served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, actually has a school named after Dr. Hendricks in that district, and rightfully so. They're very proud of the work he did there. He also, Associate Professor Emeritus and Associate Dean of the University of Arizona College of Education, and one-time School Superintendent of the Year. He currently is President of the Interfaith Community Services. It's known as ICS. He's on the board of directors. ICS partners with over 120 faith communities, serving more than 52,000 individuals each year. It's an organization that offers not only food assistance, but helps with people with job loss and that are having really are down on their luck, financial crisis. I always like to say, Dr. Hendricks, at any given moment, someone is having the worst day of their life and someone's having the best, correct?
Absolutely.
Great to see you, Dr. Hendricks. How have you been?
Good. And speaking of ICS, we just finished a one-month campaign.
How'd it go?
To collect peanut butter.
What?
Just peanut butter. And 11,000 jars of peanut butter through our community, our faith communities, and independent citizens. A lot of people don't realize that peanut butter is one of those stable commodities mm-hmm. that particularly young kids, hungry kids, can be pretty self-sufficient helping themselves to. And so this is going to help us a great deal, you know, over the coming months because our pantries sometimes get pretty bare.
Well, peanut butter is so high in protein.
It is.
So it is really, that's why food organizations, food scarcity organizations that try to eliminate food scarcity, like your organization, always, I mean, the Community Food Bank, always asking for peanut butter.
It's and like cereal. One of the,
cereal.
Yes.
Yeah, a couple of staples.
Yes.
That,
yeah.
You know,
and hopefully not the sugar-coated cereals, but because unfortunately those are the cheapest to buy. But
yeah.
You know, we hope that we can go with commodities that have less sugar and more vitamins.
The talking about now education, it's been a while since every school in the state, the facilities themselves have been ordered, inspected, and that's exactly what the governor is doing. Correct.
Yes, it's never really been done on a periodic, systematic basis, and Governor Hobbs has proposed, and it's going to happen, that there be regular inspections of all public schools in the state of Arizona.
I mean, that makes sense.
Well, it does. You know, school facilities, you know, depending on the district, are aging, and you know, we talk a lot as homeowners about preventative maintenance. You know,
yeah.
you get a, you get a crack in your ceiling and you fix it. You take care of
the roof,
minor repairs on the roof and the air conditioning system. Well, you think about that on a grander scale in a school district, and oftentimes they don't have the maintenance personnel to do those things. And, you know, the cost has escalated to bring in vendors, if you can find a vendor who will come out and do that kind of work. So it's really a problem. So hopefully the governor's initiative here can really create an inventory of what issues schools are dealing with and deal with this, disrepair of facilities. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people say, well, you know, don't schools have the money to do that?
Yeah,
well,
shouldn't it be up to the individual districts to do it?
Yeah, districts have, a general maintenance fund, but it doesn't amount to the amount of money that is needed to take care of the various repairs that are necessary. So really the only option that schools have is to go for a bond initiative.
Like TUSD has decided to do this fall.
Right. There's two voters sometimes don't know that there are two initiatives that a school district can go after. One is the override. Mm-hmm. You hear a lot about override elections.
Yeah.
They tend to be not as successful as bond elections, but the override elections deal specifically with salaries.
Oh,
whereas
I did not know that.
Bond
I've always
elections,
heard about override elections, not
right,
sure what that
that's
meant.
Salaries. Yeah. That could be teacher salaries. It could be maintenance workers. It could be bus drivers. But it's always in the category of salaries. Whereas bond elections have to do with capital improvements. So that capital improvement could be a new roof. It could be a solar system. It could be working on the purchase of new buses, replacing old ones. It could be any of those expenditures. And so they tend to be a little bit easier to pass for the voters because either initiative is going to bring, you know, an increase or impact on the homeowner's tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
But bond elections tend to be a little bit easier because people say, we can see what has happened with that money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a product. It's something substantial. And so that would be the category that districts would go after. But there's never enough money for that. Now, there's also a capital maintenance committee that was set up by the legislature with a reserve amount of money that districts could apply for money. That is woefully underfunded. It's never been funded to the point that the legislature has promised. And so districts can go hat in hand, you know, to this committee and say, look, we have a dilapidated building.
Mm-hmm.
The roof is falling in. We've got a safety issue. Would you give us X number of dollars? Here are the bids that we've secured. So it's a legitimate request. We've done our due diligence. Committee could say yes, could say no.
Mm.
And so I really applaud the governor's initiative to do these inspections. And now the next step is going to be when these results come in, which I think are going to be alarming, when they come in, what's the next step? Because it's going to have to land in the laps of the legislature,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to have to revisit what was originally intended to be an emergency fund. They've got to help these districts out because districts simply cannot keep going back to the voters asking for more and more bond money.
Yeah. At some point, just runs out. All right. We're going to take a break right here. I will talk a little bit about the vouchers and how, well, really, can Arizona continue to afford these vouchers in an environment with tax revenues falling? So more with Dr. Robert Hendricks right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Oh, that looks nice. 87 degrees over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The elevation's 5,500 feet, so it is going to be cooler. We always say roughly around 10 degrees cooler than Tucson, and usually that's the case. Not a bad drive at all, about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Start your planning now. On the website, you'll see all sorts of great activities to tempt you. A lot of outdoor activities. Some great places to stay as well in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's continue now with Dr. Robert Hendricks, our education contributor. Dr. Hendricks, tomorrow we have Tom Horn, the superintendent of public instruction. Of course, he's all in on school vouchers, and one of our questions for him will be, how in the world can we continue to afford school vouchers while at the same time tax revenues are falling?
Yeah, it's an interesting math problem. You know, you've got the Arizona Universal School Voucher Program, and I'm emphasizing the word universal because that's really a new thing. The universal really is why we're kind of in this situation right now, because it used to be selective funding. Now
special, it's pretty for much special needs, right?
Right. Now it's pretty much for everybody. Anybody that wants it.
Yeah.
And so that demand has been climbing, but of course revenues have been plummeting. And so there, you know, we see some rocky financial times ahead. The total cost of vouchers, we're looking at about $943.8 million. And that's with 52% new education funding. And that only represents 8% of Arizona's public school students. And so the budget is just really very difficult to untangle. And a part of the problem is that we project, and no one knows for sure at this point, because schools have just started. So until we actually get, some hard numbers, we're not going to know. But the projection is that the legislature is going to be short by about $319 million.
So something's got to give, right?
Major shortfall.
Wow.
And, a couple of the critics that have analyzed this say, the legislature has been very liberal and generous in supporting other kinds of programs, which might be very short-sighted, and knowing now that maybe they're going to have to find this money somewhere, because it's already been committed. The folks that have been eligible, who have gained eligibility through meeting the qualifications,
yes,
are entitled to that money, mm-hmm. which is about $7,000 per student, which is a lot of money. It's approximately 65,000 students statewide that are eligible, that are participating in this program. And the question is, and it's a question you can ask Superintendent Horn,
I know what you're going to say, accountability, right?
Accountability, right. Accountability, and also...
And you've asked him this on the previous visit when he was on
show. I have.
You asked him, you called in when he was here, and I'm glad you did, and you asked him, well, what about the accountability of this? And I don't believe he really gave you an answer, did he?
No, we've got about 25,000 homeschoolers,
yes,
across the state who are not obligated to take any kind of achievement tests, no assessment. The only thing they have to do is they're required to register with the county superintendent's office so that we have an actual count of who's out there. But we really don't know what they're doing. Now, to be really fair, I know some folks who homeschool who have...
who've had a good experience?
Had good, not only a good experience, but they've done what's called microschooling, which is provide a coalition of parents,
yes,
who have come together,
mm-hmm.
with their children.
Like
and
a cooperative.
A co-op, educational co-op. Mm-hmm. I think, that is a very supportive and positive way to homeschool. But there's a lot of loose activity, mm-hmm. out there. And what's interesting is I talked to one of the superintendents recently, and I have a quote that I'd like to share. He said, certainly parents have the right to choose their child's education, but the law has really created a revolving door. I frequently see students returning to our schools when homeschooling did not hold the promises parents thought.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, they return academically behind.
Mm-hmm.
From the teacher perspective, there's often no communication as to what curriculum they were taught, and the parent is frustrated because their child is not functioning at grade level. So he talks about seeing parents pull their kids in and out of schools multiple times.
And that's got to be really hard on the student, right? You're in and out of school. First you're at home, then you went to a new
school. Hard on the child, hard on the teacher. it just is not... It's not an excusable way to educate children. Again, maybe the parent's heart is in the right place, but it's like trying to move them in and out of a school environment during a school year. Now, however, when they do come back, Bill, they have to be tested.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the moment of truth.
Right.
A child comes back from being homeschooled for 1 year or maybe even three,
mm-hmm.
months,
mm-hmm.
or maybe 2 years,
mm-hmm.
then they have to be tested. And the test indicates whether they are at grade level or behind grade level. And oftentimes these are children that prior to homeschooling, the school has records of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have some basis, comparative basis, to look how they progressed.
And yeah, I want to get back to that shortfall. $319 million shortfall. There goes your rainy day budget, right? I mean,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the state only has so much money. I don't know what it currently is in the rainy day budget, but I don't know where they're going to go with that.
Well, in our previous conversation, we're talking about what are we going to do about schools that are falling down? You know, where's that money going to come from? There are all these buckets of money that are out there, but they've been tapped. Some of them are empty. And so I'm not sure that the legislature really knew what they were in for. And I know that Mr. Horn believes that the state can come up with that kind of money.
How?
But I don't know. That would be a question to ask him.
Yeah, we had a listener just email me about accountability. You were talking about accountability for homeschooling. Well, you were talking about accountability for vouchers, and the listener was saying, "What about accountability for public schools?"
Well, I mean, part of the answer to that question is that there are state tests. Students are required to take those tests every year. Those results are shared with the parent. Many times it's in a teacher-student conference situation, and parents can see the benchmarks, and they can see whether their child is progressing or not. Now, you know, one of the major issues with those testing results over the past couple of years, we talked about this before, the pandemic really has hit hard on student performance. And the academic
and we
progress
haven't really
of students,
caught up. We haven't caught
we
up.
We've not caught up. We've not caught up. And we've particularly we're behind with those youngsters who are coming from low economic situations, who are, I might add, were behind to begin with, and now they're even further behind. And so those tests are important because they do give us benchmarks. They give us a way to develop a plan for remediation, but remediation is going to be a major 12-month project. It can't be 9 months with a lot of vacations. Parents are going to have to pitch in. Students are going to have to go to school more than what we typically think of the traditional approach. And I think many school districts are willing to provide that extra help, but everybody's going to have to jump in on the
game.
And
the schools offered summer school for but a lot of the kids and parents just didn't, they ignored it.
Right. And it's, you know, it's free. It's free. These are of no cost to parents. And so I would encourage parents, if they get that report card that's tied with a achievement test result and they're alarmed at what they see, work with the school, develop an educational achievement plan to help your child catch up.
All right, Dr. Robert Hendricks, always a pleasure. We will see you in September. Again, as the song goes, see you in September. So thanks, Bob, and good luck with your work with the Interfaith Council.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. And again, we've got Tom Horn, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, on the program tomorrow. So we'll talk with him about some of the issues that Dr. Hendricks has brought up concerning vouchers. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and Tom, engineering and producing our program, on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody a great day.